Do you want to make your money?
All right, Mr. Benjamin, good afternoon to you.
Hi, good evening, Zama. How are you?
Very well, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Ah, doing well, man. I hope you had a good day.
Yes, my day was awesome. My day was awesome. I hope you had a good day too.
I had a fantastic one. Good to have you on the show once again. Absolutely enjoy having you here on Business Sense. Thank you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Now, we want to talk about the rise in social engineering this afternoon. And of course, security is all about knowing who and what to trust. It's important to know when and when not to take a person at their word, and when the person you are communicating with is who they say they are. The same is true of online interactions and website usage. Now, when do you trust that the website you are using is legitimate or is safe to provide your information? And this is what we want to have covered by the end of this conversation. Now, what is social engineering, Benjamin?
Thank you, Zama. So, social engineering in general, it's a manipulation technique which exploits human error, to gain private information, and access to information and resources that normally one would not give to someone.
Okay.
So, so usually it is it happens to unsuspecting users, so an unsuspecting user, and you are tricked into exposing your data, you're tricked into exposing your data, and in the end you probably then find out that you are an attack has happened on you, maybe a certain malware has been installed on your PC, or on your device, and maybe you've lost some information, banking details, financial records, etc. So, basically that's social engineering. The main aspect being a person is misled by someone into divulging their confidential information.
Yeah.
And then you willingly give out information without knowing that you're under an attack.
Yeah, it actually makes me comfortable, uncomfortable rather, to actually be giving especially very sensitive information online with people that you have never met. However, I do want to check, how does this attack look like? How does this social engineering typically would look like?
So, people are cunning, eh? And one thing you have to know is when one is launching an attack on a social engineering type of attack, you find that most of the times it just looks as if it's some normal information, a normal interaction that you're doing with someone. But mainly it comes as a phishing attack most of the times.
Okay.
So by phishing attack, what I'm saying is that an attacker pretends to be, a trusted individual or an institution, and then they persuade you to expose, data and other valuable information. I want to give an example here.
Please.
So you've noticed on emails, possibly there's what you call spamming, right?
Yeah.
So you can get spam phished. When spam phishing happens, a person just sends out, a mass information or a lot of emails at the same time to anyone who they have access to. So what happens is that it's not personalized or is directed to a certain individual. But then a person, possibly because of the lack of awareness, they might then click on a certain link that is in an email, which they do not understand, and then they're attacked like that. They then fall prey to such an attack. Or it might come, Typically, it might look like maybe what you call spear phishing.
Right.
This is usually what happens to executives, you know, important people, VIPs, celebrities, etc. So instead of them just sending a general email to everyone, they do what they call whaling. Like for example, you can then send an email, say, "Dear Benjamin Lela," you know, and you can put my title there to show that you know me.
You know,
or at least to interact with you in a certain way, and would like to invite you to this and that. So then you follow the link below for you to access to register maybe for a certain event, a VIP event, you know. Say, okay, so these people know me. You then click on the email because you think that person knows you personally, yet they don't. You get what I'm saying? So usually it comes in that way, but there are various ways that it can come in. For example, what you call phishing, that's like voice phishing.
Okay.
You know, you can use SMSs. I'm sure we've received a lot of SMSs with information and maybe some links that are embedded in those SMSs, you know, even on websites, you know, or online, maybe on our search engine, you can actually see maybe a certain site there, which looks like a certain banking site that you usually use. But there might be a few changes from maybe the URL itself. Possibly they just skip a letter, which you might not notice. And you think, okay, so it's the same, the same design, same everything. But instead, you'll be logging on to a certain, a different site. You wonder what happens when people then access your information. You'll be wondering, but what happened at the end of the day? Yet you've probably entered in a website which is not authentic.
Yeah.
You get it?
Yeah.
And then maybe just to end, there's also what you call baiting.
It's called what?
It's more like baiting.
Baiting, okay.
Like you, like you probably, for example, you dangle a worm when you're fishing, right? The same thing you do, you dangle a worm, and, you know, a fish can think, okay, so this is food, eh? Yet there's a hook in there, you get it?
Yeah.
So this usually, it can come in funny ways, like I can just leave a flash drive in an internet cafe. But on the flash drive, I've installed a certain program, a malware program. So for someone who's not a suspecting victim, they'll just come and get the flash drive and they'll plug it in onto their PC. And then I have access now to their information. So usually that's how they come. The main issue being they kind of come in a way in which they are not clear as attacks, but they tend to get your trust first so that you can actually give them access.
Very, very clear. I'm just, gobsmacked and surprised at how cunning, these people can actually, get. Now, what would you say is the aim of social engineering fraud?
Okay, so, social engineering fraud. So basically, I think what I've noticed, there are mainly two major reasons.
Right.
It's not limited to that, but generally, for social engineering fraud, a person may either want to possibly sabotage a certain company or individual. For example, let's say I'm a disgruntled employee that were fired, I can then attack you, via social engineering.
Because
I know the people that are there, who does what, etc. I can probably craft an email which looks authentic and send it to a certain person, and then that person will think, oh, okay, so this is authentic,
more like a revenge
information that is yeah, and then we then corrupt your data, and cause harm to your entire organizational network, etc. And then the other one, which is the main one, is usually just theft, theft driven. People just want to access you know, money, you know, resources online. And if I want to give an example.
Right, right.
You've ever been on Facebook, maybe this might also resonate with your last question as well on how some of the attacks look. I want to make it plain that some of these attacks are very simple, you know. So how many times have you been online, like maybe on Facebook, and you've bumped into, you know, certain individuals coming up with posts like, they say, so can you tell me your pet's name, you know, or something like that, or what was your favorite pet's name, etc. Or you can say, this one is very common. I want you to find your birthday twin, you know. I want you to find your birthday twin. So just post in the comment section your birthday. And if you share the same birthday with someone who has posted, just like on their post, etc. And then grow your accounts, etc.
I see.
So it comes as harmless fun. I just want to know who else was born on a certain date, you know. Oh, so where were you born, etc. So that information, if you then take a close look at it, that is most of the information that is used when you are creating accounts.
Yes, yes.
They ask you for your recovery questions, you know, so that in an event that you forget your password, you can then use your secret questions to, you know, unlock your account and then reset your password. So, okay, now I know your birthday, I know your pet, you know, chances are I might know maybe your favorite vehicle, etc. So what happens is that at the end of the day, I will just try to log into your account, you know, and then I enter your username, go into the password, and then simply click forgot password. Then it gives me the security questions, you know, and then try to play around with the information that I have. That attack can take a long time, but it can also take, you know, a few minutes, because you willingly give out that information thinking it's harmless, you know. And at the end of the day, you get attacked.
Man, it's a dangerous world, man. Is it? You know, the world that we're living in is really, really not safe. And this social engineering doesn't make things easy. Now, how can one, you know, safeguard themselves from these potential, you know, threats or potential social engineering where they are, you know, attacked?
Yeah. So if you want to protect yourself from social engineering, I think the first and most important thing is to know or to be aware, rather, on how social engineering works, you know, how the attacks come, you know, knowing that social engineering usually it depends on feelings most of the time, you know.
Feelings?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Like, for example, you know, there's some heightened emotions that usually come when an attack is being done. Eh?
Yeah.
I can either instill fear in you and say, this one that I once saw. Say, I've been monitoring you for the past 45 days, and I've managed to gather the information of every site that you've, you know, visited, you know. So for me not to publish that information, you need to do this and that. You get it? So a person said, okay, fine. Yeah, it's basically, you know, you then tend to, you know, you might get afraid. Eh? You say, okay, so this person knows everything about me and the sites that I visit. I mean, I'm a very important person. Eh? I'm an elder in the church. I'm a CEO. Hey. This information can't get out, so you can then, you know, for that, or you can be told, okay, so just invest $10 and you get $1,000 back within a week, you know, it is the, and then you get too excited, say, okay, so this is easy money, eh? You become greedy, you're gone, you know, or you can become curious, eh? Get ads, you know, I think you've seen them online, eh?
Yes,
do this and do that, etc, you know, or you can be guilt-tripped, eh? I've always seen this. I've actually received a few emails and I've laughed, eh? Before, when a person can say, okay, so my name is so and so, I live in a certain country, but I can't access my account, so. They tell you a very sad story. Eh?
Mm-hmm.
And say, so can you help me? I just need you to help me to access my money. So I can only do it with someone who's outside the country. ETC. And then say, okay, so being a good Samaritan, let me just help this person. You get it. Yeah. So for you to support those social engineering attacks, you need to figure to pay attention to your feelings and emotions, number one. Number two, you also need to check, for example, if it's a link that is sent to you,
mm-hmm.
Just hover on it. Don't click it. Never click a link that you don't know about.
Right.
Just hover on it and see if that link is leading to the site that it says it's leading to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, check every the content of maybe emails or anything that is sent to you. Eh? Usually, social engineering attacks, fire phishing, they usually come with a lot of errors. Eh? You know, spelling errors, grammatical errors, all those things. So you need to pay attention to the grammar, etc. Or even punctuation. You know, if you're used to talking to someone, you can tell when it's that same person has wrote an email. You know, because everyone has a way of expressing themselves, you know. So those are some of the ways of spotting those attacks. There's another one that I like the most is says you should always, as much as you should always trust, never, you know, it's a concept. It says trust but verify, you know. So always, as much as you may trust the sender, you need to verify everything that they send to you. You might know that this person, this is their actual email account, but you need to verify the contents because possibly they've been attacked before, you know, and someone is using their same email account, you know. And at the end of the day, if you verify the information, say, okay, so this there's something that is missing here, you then may use another form of communication. You probably have to call them, you know, a different medium, you know, just to verify the information before you do anything. So that's some, those are some of the things. Another thing is, you know, you can try to use multi-factor authentication. Have you seen how much mobile companies are pushing for multi-factor authentication? You know,
please tell us about that.
For example, on Apple, you can't just access your account by simply putting in a password. You need to use another way of verifying. So you can enter your password, but then they can send you a verification a number for you to log in or something like that. So that when they're using two methods of verifying or of authenticating accounts online, what happens is that most of the times attackers only have access to one, you know. So you then break the chain, you know. You, and also issues to do with, you know, passwords. We should leave this thing of using common passwords. Eh? My name, you just change a few characters, but it's still my name, and then put possibly my year of date or year of birth or to it, and then say you've got a secure password. That's not secure. You need to use strong passwords, and you don't have to use the same password for every account. Most people are guilty of this. Eh? Say, okay, your passwords are very hard to remember, so let me just, you know,
just use one account.
But what it means is that if someone gains access to that one password, they've gained access to everything, you know. Yeah, so that's how dangerous it is, you know. Don't use common names like those of your schools, your pets, you know, place of birth, and some other personal details. Eh? You need to be a bit clever when you're doing these things. Eh? If you want to give yourself a hint so that when you forget a password, you can easily remember it, use something that is not related to that, but something that will make you remember that same password. You get it. And maybe, just to carry short, there's also an issue of using, you know, public internet hotspots, you know. You get to an airport, you log in to that public Wi-Fi, you log into anything without paying a close regard to the security of the information that we have.
Mm-hmm.
So you find that you become an easy target when you log into such public Wi-Fi networks, yeah, and the like,
mm-hmm,
you know. Yeah. And maybe just to wrap it up, there's an issue of carrying out your updates. How many times have you been prompted to carry out a software update and, you know, just canceled it or postponed it to a later date?
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is with most software updates, they come with patches, you know. When they realize that there's a certain vulnerability, they then, you know, come up with the patch that you need to install,
yeah,
which comes via the updates, you know. So that keeps you secure. But most people hate updating their devices, you know, because they think, okay, so this is the stable version that I was on. I don't want to, you know, to affect it in any way. But what happens is that sometimes you then leave an open door for attackers to attack you, you know. And other people don't even care to use, you know, antiviruses and the like. It's an important thing to do. You need to invest in having a proper endpoint security solution. You know, have an antivirus which is licensed. That way, all the new definitions of viruses, malware attacks, etc., they're already downloaded to the software, which means you are possibly safe. Yeah. It's easier for you to be protected when you are up to date, you know, with what's happening in the society.
Yeah, yeah. Now, yeah, quite interesting. Which among our society would you say would be most vulnerable to attacks? Or is it just is it just about everyone?
Let me just qualify it and say everyone is susceptible to attacks,
mm-hmm,
right? But of course, there are some groups that are mainly targeted. For example, our older, our grannies, you know, first the old folks. Usually, they are attacked because they want to keep it in simple way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want to use their children's birthdays, their PIN codes, etc. Because most of them are not tech savvy, you get it. And then there are also, you know, the younger generation is usually prone to attacks because we are curious, you know. We tend to explore a lot of things, you know, want to try out this and that, this and that. So everyone, I mean, no one is safe, you know. The only way to keep yourself safe is to pay attention to anything that you receive, you know, and to be vigilant at all times, to verify the identity of every sender at each and every time, you know, and all the other things that we talked about. So no one is safe. Yeah, although there are other age groups which are mainly targeted,
mm-hmm,
like the old ones, you know, they know they've got possibly pension money, you know, so that this person has worked for 40 years, they've got maybe huge investments, you know, in financial investments, etc., you know, so they tend to attack those ones more. And maybe those who are working in, you know, big companies, etc., because they know these people are probably connected and they've got access possibly to big accounts. So what happens usually with these attacks,
mm-hmm,
is that when social engineering usually starts, the target is to just gain access, you know. So they might gain access to your information and not use it then, because the target is to then get more information, which can actually give them more money, you know, or more important information that can then be used for bigger attacks, you know. So it's usually just used as a door to, you know, to gain access to a certain environment so that they can then exploit you more with the information that they have. Yeah.
Yeah. I tend to think that, I don't know if I'm correct here, please do suggest that those who are also vulnerable will be, you know, desperate, if you're desperate for a particular, let's say you're looking for a job and you're frantically looking for a job and there's emails coming, etc., quite vulnerable because you are in a position where you want to open every link, every email, because just in case it's it's an interview. So I think if a person lands in an unfortunate, desperate situation, I think they would be even much more susceptible, not so?
You're right. You're 100% right. Remember, we once talked about issues to do with emotions and the like.
Yes, yes.
So what
yes.
happens is, for example, when you're looking for a job, I'll use your example. You're looking for each and every opportunity that comes your way. You don't want to miss an opportunity, eh? Because you're desperate for a job. So what happens is, because you're desperate for a job, it's easier for you to agree to share information that you don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
You get it?
Yeah.
Because you just want to get a job. So you might then tell yourself, okay, what if this is a genuine opportunity?
Mm-hmm.
Let me just take a chance and see how it works.
True.
You know, and then at the end of the day, then you become a victim of social engineering, you know. So desperation, it's a key thing. You never, at any time, you should never show desperation when you are talking to someone. I don't know, maybe online. Because remember, social engineering doesn't only happen online. It
mm-hmm.
can even happen in person.
Yeah, yeah.
So a person can then tell, okay, so this person is desperate, and they'll tell, okay, so I want you to send me your details so that I can then give a friend of mine who's working for a big tech company. They're looking for people, eh? I'll put in a good word for you. Just send me your details, eh? So, okay, so I just want to create an account for you.
Yeah.
You send me your information. You then, you know, willingly volunteer that information. And yet, yeah, that is probably an attack that is, you know, happening. And then at the end of the day, you ask yourself, what happened? Only because you're desperate, you probably didn't see the red flags
mm-hmm.
because you were emotional, you know, and you ended up, sharing information that you're not supposed to.
Mm-hmm. One of the ones I've seen is you know, on the WhatsApp ones, where I don't know how they hack people's numbers, and so here's a Benjamin Lela. I know him. He's a friend, and he would be sending me a text to say, "Hey Manzama, you know what? I'm in need of a quick 5,000 rands, man. If you can please help me. I'm in a desperate situation." I mean, without thinking, I know Benjamin. You know, he's a good friend. I simply say, "Okay, I'm gonna do it now, my brother," and boom, off is gone and I'm knocked. And I like that you say, no, we've got to verify, make a call if you can, so that you are at least sure that this is the person that you're talking to, because I've seen others having to claim back the money, so they come back to Benjamin and say, well, the number came from you and I deposited, and Benjamin says, but I never asked money from you, and now there's a altercation and the people are fighting because the one claims, no, I gave you the money. The one says, no, but I've never asked you for money. And so they take each other to court, and it becomes a messy situation.
Yeah, I'll give an example for that one. You know, this has actually happened. You're not very far from where I am. You know, at church, this happened. You know, a person sent a message on the WhatsApp platform, you know, like we've got groups, right, on WhatsApp. Okay, so I'm in it for this much. I don't have the cash here. I'll give you a church tomorrow. Can anyone just send me money? I'll give them tomorrow. And then the person simply said, okay, so this is so-and-so. Let me just give them, you know. They then transferred the money, only for them to find out, you know, that the person had lost their phone and someone just used their phone to look for money. And, you know, a few people sent money and they lost out. The person, when they then reported and said, okay, so I lost my phone. You guys, if anyone contacts you using my number, please let me know. Yeah, I'm trying to block the accounts, but I don't have access at the moment. You know, some people had already sent the money and the money had been withdrawn. You get what I'm saying? And so you need to verify identities. You know, at any given time, for every transaction you do, everything, whenever you send valuable information, you need to verify that the recipient is the intended recipient. You know, the destination should always be safe. If you doubt that the information is being sent to the right source,
mm-hmm.
to the right destination, don't send. It's better for someone to then call you and say, but how come you haven't sent this? You know, and then you can then verify from there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I must say that I think I've become quite vigilant because I've been almost a victim on two occasions, but only to catch the process in the middle and try and, you know, reverse those monies, etc. So I'm now extra vigilant. I mean, if any email comes and I look at the name, no, I don't know this name, and I check what were they talking about, and they say no, in response to an application, I simply just delete. I don't even entertain or anything like that. So there's a lot of emails and messages that come through. I look and I'm like, nope, I don't play games. I just delete. And I think that I don't know if you think I'm too much or am I too extra careful. But in my view, I think that even entertaining a particular email that comes from an unknown person, especially if you open it and it talks about a subject that you're not really should be receiving, I think just delete without even getting into any link.
Yeah, actually, I want to commend you for that.
Mm.
It's actually good that you do it. You can never be too safe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. When it comes to information, you need to make sure that it's right. So if there's anything that you don't understand, just delete and move on. If possible, block the sender. If it's possibly in a work environment, and you know, you can then spot that this email, there's something suspicious about this email. You don't know the sender, etc.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just confirm. Send it to your IT if you've got someone who's, you know, a specialist in IT security.
Mm-hmm.
They'll then tell you, okay, so we're going to block this person. Well, this is something that I do on a day-to-day basis. Because no matter how secure your environment is, people always try, you know, to attack. And it's not everything that is blocked. Some of the attacks come through, you know, some of the emails come through, you know, to the users, to the general users. So what then happens is that a general user then flags the email and say, okay, so I received a certain email. And then I then go and block the source. If it's the IP that sent the email, it is that then block it so that if they try again to send any email, it then gets blocked. It never gets to the end user.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I would like to commend you for that. If only people were that vigilant, you know, careful with their information, then some of these attacks may, you know, be harmless to us.
But it's
quite sad that a lot of people are losing information on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
You know.
Now, what can one do in a situation where they suspect that, they've knocked me here, and I've just realized after the bus has left that, man, I've actually been a victim here. What do I then do?
Okay. So, you know, we need to accept, first of all, you need to accept that you've been a victim.
Mm.
Before you do anything, you need to accept that, okay, so I've been attacked. Because some people, you know, they'll always be in denial. Eh? They think they know everything. So, okay, they've got this information. What is it that they're going to do about it? You know, they can't do anything with that information. Yet, you know, people are crafty. They know how to work with that information to get more information and resources. So first things first, you need to accept that you've been attacked, and you need to disconnect. For example, if you're online, if I then realize that, okay, it seems like I've been hacked, you know, the first thing that you need to do is to switch off your internet, switch off the device, and look for professional help.
Okay.
You know, you don't delay that process. make sure you get professional help as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then you find that sometimes when people get ashamed of, you know, telling or seeking help, right? Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. maybe they got attacked while they are on, they were on an ungodly site. You get it? If they then keep it to themselves. Or in other times, in other instances, people may be intimidated by, you know, the attackers. They mm-hmm. tell you, so I'm going to block you from using your devices and the company for this much. You need to pay that much. You know, that's how ransomware works and the like.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the main issue, always seek help, professional help, that people will know how to deal with these things.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we are in the cybersecurity field, because we know that such attacks will always happen.
Yeah.
And all attacks, they've got a solution. Mm-hmm. They've got remedies for everything. Yeah. And then let's just say someone has gained access to an account of yours.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's on Facebook, YouTube, etc. Maybe your email account.
Mm-hmm.
Just check if they changed their password. If they had not changed your login credentials, make sure you change them as soon as you can.
Right.
If that doesn't work, then report that account as soon as that happens. Change it, then report. You know, all of these big tech companies will give you, you know, these social sites, etc. They've got a people who are always on standby
mm-hmm.
to work around such issues and to solve those issues. So if someone then locks you out of your account, just report it. You can report an account using another person's account. That's what most people do.
You can,
let's say I've been hacked on X for my Twitter.
Yeah.
I can then ask a friend to report my account is stolen, you know.
Mm.
So another person can then report for you. Another person can report for you, then you can build a case. You definitely get, you know, communication or correspondence from maybe Twitter
mm-hmm.
to tell you, okay, just to verify if the person who made the report is a genuine person. And if they do verify that, maybe via your phone number, they call you, etc., they then block that account and then they restore your access. You get what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they need to report, yeah. Or attacks to the relevant authorities. As soon as you identify, or as soon as you see that you've been attacked, just report. Don't think twice about it. And another thing, maybe just one important thing is, some people then forget to notify others. For example, I'm using an account. An account connected with some people. I then get hacked. I then forget to, I just report, or I just tell myself I'm not going to use this account, but I don't inform everyone else. So what happens is you need to inform all affected parties. If it's a work account, make sure everyone at work knows that you are under attack, so that they will know how to behave and how to interact with you, you know.
Mm.
So that is one sure way of stopping an attack from spreading.
So they need to
make all parties. Yeah.
Now tell me, in terms of these attacks on the financial side, I'm now looking at the financial institutions, banks, for instance, where you have been attacked and you've lost money, and you can prove that, listen, it was not me. I didn't withdraw this amount of money. I tend to see that banks don't generally play along. It's your loss. It's your loss. Is there a way that financial institutions get involved and try to help, or they just distance themselves and say, "No, you sort it out yourself"?
Yeah. So it's rather unfortunate that no one wants to, you know, take up the risk that comes with, you know, with cyber attacks.
Mm.
You know, you get attacked, you lose your access to account, you lose your money. You find that most financial institutions, they have it in fine print that anything that happens due to negligence is not their problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, that's why we need to be vigilant as users.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of the times you don't get to, you won't get your money back For example, if it's withdrawn, it's withdrawn. The only thing they can do is to reinstate your account and to make sure that you don't lose anything further from that point on.
Mm.
Unless, of course, if you are insured, you know, then good for you if you're insured against such attacks.
Yeah.
But rarely do we find people being insured for you know, financial loss and the like,
mm-hmm.
unless if they are, you know, executives or VIPs.
Yeah.
But a lot of money. Yeah.
Then you can secure yourself. Mm.
Yes, but that's why you find that most banks are pushing for for multi-factor authentication when they're logging in. It isn't possibly having more than one signatory for big accounts, you know, so that no one can then just, you know, make a payment without mm-hmm. getting a co-signatory to authorize. I will give an example of one of some big companies in Zimbabwe.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened is that an attacker sent an email,
right.
You know, yes, to the finance team. So, for example, there's a person who generally deals with payments, right?
Mm.
So they then sent a payment instruction to that person. May you please pay this much to this account? You get it?
Yeah.
And then on the email, they made it look as if their finance director had given the order for that person to make that payment.
Uh-huh.
So the person, because remember, the email is coming from an executive account. They did not question why such a payment was being done. What they did, they simply, you know, expedited the payment and they paid fast. They did their payment and the man was out of the bank, you know. And the company lost millions.
Eish.
Just because the person couldn't, you know, verify the identity and said, okay, so this person sent me an email. They told me to pay this person. And unfortunately, there was only one signatory for that account, which was the finance director. So when they initiated the payment, the finance director is the one who had been hacked. So they used this email to send the payment instruction.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the payment was uploaded online, they used that same person's email to then what? Authorize the payment. The payment was authorized.
Yeah.
They withdrew the money, and that was it. You know, so it was rather embarrassing for a big company,
especially a big company,
multi-million dollar company, to be, you know, attacked in such a way, to lose out on millions simply because the people did not follow due process. That's why there are controls that we put in place in companies or when they're making payments, etc. You need to have this and that signed first. You know, certain documentation should be in place before you make a payment. And then the instruction can be coming from, maybe the instruction has been initiated by someone who's superior to you, maybe an executive. You know, there needs to be another person at a certain level then, you know, initiates the payment, and then another one signs, and then maybe the executive then signs at the end. That way, you then put multiple layers of protection so that you don't lose out on your financial resources. Really.
Mm. Yeah. Lastly, and I got to let you go, Benjamin. Those who have been listening, we are having a conversation with Benjamin Lela, talking about the rise in social engineering and what is it that you can do as you know, an individual to make sure that you protect yourself and your loved ones. Now, if one finds that the institutions that they deal with, especially financial institutions, they don't have the multi-layered protection, can one then call the banker or go to the bank and say, listen, when I log on to this, it only asks me for this. I would like you to please make it layered, or it is the bank's prerogative to provide that?
Well, so what happens in such a situation, you need to make sure that you're safe, your information is safe, your resources are safe, financial resources, etc. So in the case of banks, if they don't have multi-factor authentication, you need to ask them to put that in place. It's a right to ask them.
I see.
You know, and they need to actually adhere to that.
Mm-hmm.
But in the case that they don't give you that layer of protection that you've asked for,
mm-hmm.
the wise thing to do is to just move, you know, shift and go to a safer bank.
Yes, yes.
Because at the end of the day, your safety comes first, mm-hmm. you know. Yeah, so you need to put yourself first. Say, okay, so there's only one layer of protection here. If my password is compromised, it's compromised. Mm. I lose everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So I need to protect myself, you know. But I'm not sure of the legislation that is there in place. Because there might be some certain form of legislation. Usually for banks, they have the legislation comes from above. So that's why you find that most banks have got multi-factor authentication mm-hmm. in place. It's not because they just thought of doing it. Some of these instructions come from regulators, you know, via the government, etc. So at least I know most companies are now adhering to that because they have no other way. If they want to operate, they need to then, you know, adhere to that.
Yeah.
And just to add, we now have other institutions which are coming in place with policies that we need to follow
mm-hmm.
in our operations. For example, in South Africa, there's now what they call POPIA.
Yeah.
In Europe, there's GDPR. And in Zim, there's the Data Protection Act and mm-hmm. all that. It talks about how people's information is handled.
Mm.
So your information is not allowed to be shared to the next person without your consent.
Right.
Number one. Number two, it also talks about, you know, some of those protection mechanisms that are put in place to safeguard your information and your resources. So it's a welcome move for some of us who are in cybersecurity because we know, okay, this will actually make our jobs easier.
Mm-hmm.
And it
mm-hmm.
also protects, you know, our users. Yeah. So those are some of the things that you may need to just take into consideration. But the best thing, just make sure you're safe. If your bank doesn't give you the protection that you need, I would advise you to move.
Lovely. You know. Lovely. Now, literally, we have got 1 minute to get to the end of our conversation. I just need to check, as a cybersecurity specialist, you know, how do you find the eyeball verification to be working? I've heard that others saying it's watertight, but in recent times, I've heard that, well, I think the attackers have found a way to bypass that. Is that factual?
The which one?
The eyeball verification. You know, you look at the phone and it opens. Yeah.
Okay. We usually term it as biometric verification. Yeah. So what happens? It's effective because you've heard no one is an identical eye to anyone else.
Mm.
So, yeah. But it's also a bit pricey. You know. So you find that most people don't have access to that.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other ways of, you know, verifying, you know, using your fingerprints, you know, tokens, etc.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why tokens are still in use by banks is because some of these verification techniques, biometric verification techniques, are a bit expensive to
use.
But they're definitely effective. If one can afford to get such a verification technique in place,
mm-hmm.
They need to go for it. You can never spend too much when it comes to your safety.
Beautiful. Well, Benjamin Lela, always a pleasure to have you here on Business Sense. And today was definitely a pleasure, no different. Thank you so much for your insights. Thank you so much for expertise and having a conversation with us, setting aside your precious time to be able to talk to us and our listeners about this very important subject, because I think it affects everyone, whether you're a Christian or whether you're an atheist, whether you are a billionaire, whether you're a struggling somebody. It affects everyone, as you just said. And so I do want to thank you so, so much for imparting such valuable information. Blessings to you.
Thank you very much, Sama. Have a good night.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
Cheers.
Do you want to make your money make sense? Listen to Business Sense every Monday to Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. and make sense of your money.